listening to It's Your Health Radio.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. So glad you're listening to It's Your Health, and I'm thrilled to have Dr. Perry Halkitis on the program. He's a professor of global public health, applied psychology, and medicine, director of the Center for Health, Identity, Behavior, and Prevention Studies, and the inaugural associate dean of academic affairs at the College of Global Public Health at New York University. He is also the editor-in-chief of Behavioral Medicine, a journal currently featuring a special issue on the health of boys and men that we're going to be talking about today. Dr. Halkitis, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so wonderful. Your background is extensive. I have a master's in public health, and I love what you do. Let's talk a little bit about the behavioral medicine in general in terms of this peer-reviewed journal, and then jump into this special issue.
Right. So Behavioral Medicine is a journal that I took over in 2013, and the journal really focuses on health and health disparities, looking at the differences in health across populations as part of the core of the journal, but also to look at the biological, psychological, and social factors that drive health conditions. I think it's very easy for people to sort of fall back on this idea that all health conditions are just driven by biological phenomena. And what the journal really tries to do is use this biopsychosocial perspective and argue that there are psychological phenomena, behavioral phenomena, social phenomena, laws and policies that interact with biological phenomena that explain the health of people and the disparities in health that we see across populations.
Wow. I think it's so good. Again, I mentioned before that this work really needs to be put out there. Let's talk about this special issue, the health of boys and men. What are we going to find in this issue?
So this is an issue that lives very close to my heart, because for 20 years I had been studying one aspect of the health of boys and men, namely the HIV epidemic in the gay population. And there's a couple of articles in special issue about that, but it's broader. So what do we know about the health of men in general? Well, we know in the United States that men and boys, young men, tend to access health care at much lower rates than women do. We also know that there is a challenge in intersecting with the health professions for men because of conceptions of masculinity that often interfere with men actually seeking and asking for help. And then what we also know is that, you know, the experience of men is not monolithic like any other segment of the population. Men are diverse in terms of race, ethnicity, and culture, and socioeconomic status, and sexual orientation, and what have you. And that when we think about delivering health care to boys and men, we need to, one, address the fact that boys and men first don't seek care as much as women do, and two, attend to these differences that will help us more effectively deliver services to them, and three, really think about the meaning, what it means to be a man to men. I'm sorry, that seems like a very odd way of saying it, but what the meaning of being a man and masculinity, what that is for men, and how that plays into them being able to access care in an effective way, and how that often acts as an impediment to accessing care.
Yeah, I was about to say that the first thing that came to my mind is that attitude and that masculinity and that macho-ness, they still call it that, is an impediment, isn't it? And it seems like you're always hearing about loved ones or women saying to the men in their lives, you got to go to the doctor, you got to get this checked out. No, I'm fine. I got to be strong. And that really isn't helping. And how do we break that down? Get them.
Well,
that's a
great question. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think that, you know, masculinity is a socially constructed phenomenon, right? We expect men to act, to behave, to look a certain way, right? And I think that what is required for us as a society is sort of chip away at these hyper-masculine conceptions, right? To sort of, you know, say it is okay to be a man who, you know, has some feminine qualities, that masculinity is not just defined by big muscles and being tough and being a brute. And I think as we continue to have conversations about what it means to be a man in our society, one of the fallouts of that will be that men will access care more readily. I have actually a sort of fascinating thing that I've been thinking about, if I could just share it
of
with
course.
You. It's interesting to me just because of the work I've been doing with HIV. So we think about, I'm a gay man who came of age in the 1980s. So So I saw a lot of loss around me. What I'm seeing right now are people of my generation, people, men who were infected in the 1980s, actually living now into their 50s and 60s, which is remarkable that this has happened in 30 years' time, right? So they've been accessing care and getting services for a long time. And some, fortunately, remaining relatively healthy. What's really interesting to see right now is that our peers, many of whom are heterosexual men, who have not been accessing care as frequently as we have, because we've had to, because we're gay men, are starting to develop health problems that were probably controllable if they actually went to doctors more regularly. So they're developing cardiovascular disease, they're developing diabetes, they're developing all these other things because they haven't cared for themselves. And it's this paradoxical thing that's happening, that you see this generation of older gay men who in some ways are healthier than straight men who were not as affected by the AIDS epidemic and are getting older. Now, I think it's a fascinating sort of thing that I'm trying to wrap my head around.
Oh, I completely agree. You know, I think part of it is that my first reaction would be that a lot of people might think, well, I think it's because gay men take better care of themselves, right? Overall, because it's important to the physical fitness is important and the looks are important. But I think that's more of, a generalization or a stereotype, right? I'm just being honest. Because I tend to look at gay men and be like, oh my gosh, they're so much cleaner and better looking. But I know they're all not, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I do. I actually think it's generational, though. I think that you look at millennials, and I think it's very, as somebody who's like 53 years old, I look at millennials, and I don't know who's gay and who's straight, right?
Yes,
because I think that, all young gay men actually really pay a lot of attention to their appearance. I think it's like the AIDS epidemic's been this phenomenally difficult thing, but in some ways, for gay men, it has a positive side, too, and this is what I've been trying to write about recently, which is that it's like really caused gay men to have to attend to their well-being, to their health, and really be attuned to their bodies in a way that folks who aren't affected by the epidemic have not been.
Yes, and it's interesting, too, because I know that in this special edition, there is a article on muscle dysmorphia and eating disorders in men. So that can also be a problem, right? When men are too focused on their appearance and their health, that turns out to be in a negative way. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So, I think, we have this abundant literature out there that really shows the effects of, body issues in young women and women in general, just because of the expectations of society for women to look a certain way. And, fortunately, the modeling industry sort of finally getting on board and saying, like, hey, you know what, you can't be that thin. And so, thank God some changes are being made there. But, the similar phenomenon happens for men. If you were to open any magazine, popular magazine, you see men who have perfect chiseled bodies, and that's not the norm, right? I mean, that's having that kind of body takes a lot of care and a lot of attention. The athletes at the Olympics clearly have that body. And so if you're a young man and you're striving for that, then what is likely to happen is a very similar phenomenon. What happens to young women is like, you are over pumping. You are spending way too much time at the gym. Perhaps you are using steroids. Perhaps to make your muscles bigger. You are under eating, and you're doing all this enormous stress on your body to look like an Adonis. And there was a book several years ago, published about the Adonis Complex that really talks about this issue of men's body image. Men have body image issues in a very similar way that women do. And here's an example, again, of why this special issue matters, is because this is not talked about a lot, the fact that men have eating disorders and have body dysmorphia. We talk about it all the time with women. It's in our dialogue. It's in our media. So what we're trying to do is bring these issues forward for men, too, because they are as relevant for men as they are for women.
Yeah, I think it does need to be brought forward. What are some of the other things, especially looking at depression? There's another area where, again, a man might not want to talk about it or not know where to turn who they can
trust
and that kind of thing.
So there's this construct in psychology called alexithymia, right, which, maybe you believe in, maybe you don't, which indicates your ability to actually talk about the emotions you're having, to express in words, to be in touch with your feelings. It is suggested in some literature that, that men in general are not in touch with their feelings as much as women are. And as a result of that, do not seek out mental health care as much as women do. Yet depression, we know, is a very, very powerful phenomenon. It is a powerful phenomenon that leads to risk behavior. It leads to substance use. It leads to excessive drinking. It leads potentially to overeating, to undereating, what have you. It leads to hostility and violence. And I think that it is for men who are resisting care in general, mental health care is even further off their map. And when we think about, you know, specific segments of the population, for example, immigrant groups or, you know, communities where, like, mental health is not openly discussed, those men are even more risk for very serious effects of depression the course of their lifetime, which, you know, is ultimately going to affect every aspect of their life, their schooling, their ability to have effective jobs, their ability to have effective relationships. And so it's all these things come together because men tend not to access care for their bodies, care for their souls, care for their hearts in at equal rates as women do.
You know, I'm curious, we only have a couple minutes left. If someone's interested in submitting research to behavioral medicine, what's the process?
So we are open to all types of articles on the biopsychosocial aspects of health from all over the world. So behavioral medicine, you could find it very easily at the Taylor and Francis site. There is a very clear instructions to authors. So authors can submit their peer-reviewed articles there. We carefully consider all articles that are submitted to us. They are assigned to associate editor. Reviewers, you know, review them carefully. We provide very, very careful and detailed feedback to authors. So we encourage authors from around the world to submit there. It's a very simple portal that you would access and submit your articles there. I will also say that you should look out in the future for other special issues that will be coming along. Next year we'll be publishing a special issue on personality disorders and health. And we're thinking for 2 years after that, a special issue on trafficking in health, the trafficking of men and women in health. So I encourage anybody who's interested to submit, to please submit to us. We're a really cutting-edge, interesting journal that has risen in the ranks very, very much in the last few years.
Well, tell us again where we can find it.
So it's at the Taylor at the Taylor and Francis site. Taylor and Francis is our publisher. So I don't have the actual link in front of me right now, but if you search on behavioral medicine, Taylor and Francis, it will take you to the site. It will take you to the portal, which is the Scholar One portal. And at the Scholar One portal, you'll be able to very simply submit your article there.
Well, that sounds terrific. Dr. Halkaitis, it has been so fabulous having you here on It's Your Health. I look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.